Stephen Chandler writes, "Jazz is at the periphery of modern tastes, yet it may be one of the few musical genres truly representative of the human condition, ranging the spectrum of emotions and capable of reaching spiritual depth. There's certainly a humbler side to jazz, which, like other types of music, can be more diversion than art, but it's most powerful as a platform for personal exploration. The greatest jazz albums are expository forces, musical confessions, whose notes, chords, and rhythms extend directly from human sensation and feeling. John Coltrane, for example, told of his religious awakening through his four-part suite, A Love Supreme, in 1965. 2 years earlier, Charles Mingus released The Black Saint and the Sinner Lady, a masterful composition in six movements, or dances, which he described in the liner notes as his living epitaph from birth till the day I first heard of Bird, Charlie Parker, and Diz. Of all the jazz composers, Charles Mingus understood best the capacity for jazz music to delve into the mind and spirit of the musician. As an instrumentalist, Mingus's legend was secured through the technical and improvisational skills he displayed as a bassist. He's one of the greatest rhythm players in the history of jazz. His renown as a composer, in light of his proficiency as a musician, points to the originality and imagination of his compositions. Supplementing his work are anecdotes of his fiery temperament, instability, and a political outspokenness that often alienated him from mainstream jazz audiences. Racial oppression is a prevailing theme in Mingus's work. He suggests, however, that his music may be richer as a result of his struggles. In his autobiography, Beneath the Underdog, His World as Composed by Mingus, he writes, "There's all kinds of emotion to play in music, but the one I'm trying to play is very difficult. It's the truth of what I am. It's not difficult to play the mechanics of it, but it's difficult because I'm changing all the time." That means one cannot just listen to the music of Charles Mingus. You must meet him halfway, venture the human landscape which he sets forth in valleys of beauty and brutality, in volcanic lava flows that pour directly from his heart. The cadence of his music is much more than simply a means of keeping time. It's his own rhythmic throbbing, his heart's iridescent trembling, or as Mingus describes it in his autobiography, "evidence of my soul's will to live beyond my grave, my transformation or eternal soul's new encasement." That from an essay titled The Many Moods of Charles Mingus by Stephen Chandler in Highbrow Magazine, March 2013. The richness and complexity of the music of Charles Mingus will be at the center of a 25-year-old tradition this Sunday when the First Presbyterian Church of Clark Summit integrates jazz into its communion service, as it has been doing each and every Labor Day weekend since 1991. The Reverend Bill Carter is pastor of the church and a veteran jazz pianist who leads the esteemed Presby Bop Sextet, and he doesn't see any conflict in the coming together of the world of jazz and the world of church.
There's only one world that I know of. And as I never tire of saying, if there is a line between sacred and secular, it is a dotted line. Because the divine power can come upon people outside of a church and certainly does not come on command. And there is no place so dark that the holy light of God cannot break in somehow. And so part of my work for the 25 years that we've been doing jazz at this church has been looking for those linkages, shining a little fresh light upon them, and inviting people to dance along.
What a wonderful image, that image of the dance.
It points to the full dimensions of what it means to be human. I'm hoping to catch up soon on the lectures that Wynton Marcellus and others gave at Chautauqua this summer. They had a full jazz week, the last full week, And he brought his Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra on stage in different configurations of small groups. But the presentations and actually the sermons and the amphitheater every day had to do with different dimensions of the blues, of elation and joy, with collaboration together, all of which are human dynamics that jazz picks up upon.
As you just said, it's about being human together.
It is. Jazz is one of the few collaborative art forms in process. Painters go into their individual place, their studio. The writer writes in solitary places, maybe comparing notes at dinner time with the loved ones or colleagues. But the jazz people come together in the same place and create together in motion. And I think a religious community not only needs to commission artists, but also to welcome them for what they bring, new insight. There's a quote somewhere, I'd have to look it up, in Benedict's Rule from the 6th century. He said, it's always a good idea to have some creative artists and artisans around the monastery. And it's not because of the faith that they bring, it's because of the skill and the insight that they bring to faith. And one of the recurring sins of religious people is they think that they're the only ones in the room, or that they can impose an order upon other people that will instantly make them as pious as these hypocrites happen to be. And so, again, to break down that line between what's in and what's out and say, this is all one sphere, one world, one life, and all of it, as I say, as a Reformed tradition Christian, all of it belongs to God. It's all offered to God. It is something that touches upon our deepest spiritual hungers, but also our joys and our hurts.
And I would imagine that when Wynton Marsalis and company were talking about the blues,
yes,
there was an awful lot, yes, of that hurt part.
Absolutely. And it also, in my experience, which has kind of wandered into being a pastoral presence and friend and companion for jazz musicians, is that they find a lot of church folks to be a bit square, a little bit hung up on ritual and behaviors, not necessarily enthusiastic about the things they profess to believe. And as one of them said, don't tell me I'm your brother on Sunday and then diss me on Monday. So there needs to be an integration between what we believe and how we live together. And again, the jazz we've selected for this year kind of heightens that. For our 25th year, we will be highlighting the music of Charles Mingus, a virtuoso bass player raised in the Pentecostal Christian tradition. Some of his music has shouts and hollers and hand clapping as if we're back in a revival church. Some of it sounds like a fiery preacher just letting the gospel into the air with force and furor. Some of it is prayerful and mournful, like it's a time of prayer together. And all of this lifted up for the listening public. Along with that, Mingus taps into the great prophetic tradition of the Hebrew Scriptures that Jesus later will speak upon and draw upon in drawing attention to injustice and the putting down of people who are different because of race or economics. And these, I believe, are very, very important issues, especially in an election year like this. So we thought that this would push the envelope a little bit. It will make our largely white congregation squirm a little bit in the best kind of ways, and that this will draw our attention to what it really means to be a neighbor to those around us.
Who will be joining you?
Who's in my neighborhood? Okay. Yeah. The musical neighborhood this year includes kind of a recurring cast of folks. Al Hamm, of course, on saxophone, my college music professor, recovering from shoulder surgery and doing quite well. He'll be playing alto sax. Michael Carbone will play the tenor saxophone. He's in our Christmas Eve band with the Presby Bop Group. He comes down from Binghamton. Jeffrey Stockham will be playing trumpet and valve trombone.
Remind people they may know him.
Oh, they know him if they've been around. He was in the Lincoln movie for Spielberg. He has done extraordinary work with Civil War music and band music. But he has a master's in French horn from Eastman and has played both that horn and his trumpet with Thelonious Monk Jr.'s big band. So, I mean, high credibility. Wonderful, wonderful guy. Tony Marino is the bass player, and if we're going to do the music of Mingus, we have to have a great bass player, and there is none better. I can't say enough about him. He's a creative genius and a treasure of northeastern Pennsylvania. And then rounding the group out is Tyler Dempsey on drums, an up-and-coming star, a great musician, and I like to say about Tyler, he's one of the Abington Heights band kids who once sold me fruit, grapefruit, so he could go to Florida on a band trip back 10 years ago or so when he was in high school. Great musician, wonderful, wonderful guy.
Back when you were talking about Benedict, you used the word faith, not the faith in terms of creed, but in terms of the skill. And it seems that it's an act of faith every time you all get together and say, we're going to do this music of Mingus. Let's see if we can.
More than you can imagine. When we had our rehearsal recently, I counted off one of the tunes, and it went flying forward, and I thought, oh, my goodness, this is going faster than I can play it. And, you know, here's the secret. We've talked enough, Erica, I can tell you the truth. The secret is to always hire musicians better than you. It's like playing tennis with Selena Williams. You know, she's going to hit it down your throat. And about the fourth volley, you'll begin to hit it back. So it has been an inspiration for me for these 25 years to improve in my musicianship and stand alongside these musical friends.
How is the music integrated into the liturgy?
Well, again, that's been part of my work for 25-plus years, thinking about what is the function of music within a worship service. There are the obvious places where an instrumentalist, usually an organist, might play in the beginning and the end, the prelude and the postlude, both kind of open spots. There's also the music that gets played when the offering plates are passed, the offertory. And then there's the special music, which in this case will be a piece of Mingus that we'll do called Fables of Faubus. I'll tell you about in a minute. And that'll be focusing just on the band to play for a few minutes. We also accompany the hymns, and we also have a litany of confession for our prayer of confession, which is based on the minor blues. So we confess to the minor blues, and our cantor will sing four measures of it. The congregation will respond. The cantor will sing, and on it goes for a while. So we've thought about this a lot. Occasionally in some of our jazz vespers, while someone reads the scripture lesson, the band will interpret it, sometimes spontaneously or immediately following. And that, again, adds visual and instrumental color to the reading. And what we're trying to do is lift music out of something that happens when nobody's paying attention. I've worked with enough musicians in the church and in my church life to know that an organist may prepare a piece that nobody listens to because they're passing notes or talking to their friends, and it is only when the minister speaks that everybody quiets down. So we're trying to lift up the quality of what music can be as it ministers to our souls and our hearts.
Tell us about Fables.
Fables of Faubus. Mingus was a colorful character. A bit cranky and ornery, mercurial is how someone called his temperament. And as the child of an African-American soldier and a mother of mixed race, born in the 1920s, he suffered through expressions of racism his entire life. He was a light-skinned African-American, as they referred to it then. Growing up in Watts, the toughest part of Los Angeles. And music was his way out. He heard the music of Duke Ellington that inspired him, and it took off from there. Fables of Faubus refers to Governor Orville Faubus, who fought the integration of Central High School in Little Rock in the 50s. And it was President Eisenhower who sent in troops to enforce the integration of the public school, and Faubus stood up against it. A few years ago, Al Hamm and I were out with the guys in Little Rock and stopped by to see the school and to see the historical markers and monument there. A lot of the civil rights work happened when I was very young or before my life began. So that was a bit of schooling for me, having lived most of my life in white communities, very thoroughly white communities, to see that the underbelly of the injustice. He wrote this piece and had put it together, and when he wanted to record it for Columbia Records, they said, "You cannot do that." Well, why not? Because we want your record to sell. And it was not just the instrumental music, it was the vocalizations, the shouts, the impromptu lyrics between him and drummer Danny Richmond saying things like, "Who's ridiculous? It's Faubus, it's Faubus." And it was a bit of social commentary and, in the biblical sense, parody, a critique of these false powers and authorities who are set on subjugating or oppressing parts of their constituency. So this was kind of a voice from the underside. You know, Mingus said, I'm lower than an underdog, and I'm talking back. So they did record the piece for Columbia eventually without the vocalizations and the lyrics. So there are two different versions of this. But it's interesting that later in his life, after people had forgotten about Faubus, he retitled it Fables of Nixon. I'm not sure whose name he would use these days, although I have a couple of ideas.
So you're going to do it?
We're going to do that as kind of the feature centerpiece right before I preach on a sermon called The Jazz of Justice, which will draw upon Psalm 2, which says, God laughs when God looks upon the kings and nobles of this world, kind of a critique. And then also from Amos chapter 5, God doesn't want your happy songs. Let justice roll down like waters. In other words, let's make justice something we're all about, treating one another as neighbor.
And we're invited to join you.
You sure are. 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning. First Sunday of September is when we do this every year. The wise are in their seats by 9:45 because the seats are usually gone by 9:45. It's a standing room only on a holiday weekend. It's the strangest thing. When we did this 25 years ago, WNEP showed up with television cameras, which shocked us. And when I asked the lady with the big hair who interviewed us, she said, well, usually we are just simply checking out traffic fatalities for a holiday weekend, you know, drownings in the local lake and traffic tie-ups after the holidays, and it's nice to come see something positive. So for whatever that's worth. And we've been at it 25 years, and I've not gotten thrown out of the church yet.
And not shying away from hard things.
That's right. When we got this started, there were some people who said, I'm not going to come. And I said, that's fine. I wasn't going to back off. I was simply filling in for an organist who couldn't be there, and she had asked me to play, so this is how we did it. We jazzed things up. And I suspect that one of the reasons that some folks shied off is they thought that jazz is a lesser art form, or that jazz, because of its own mixed racial heritage, is not worthy of a, you know, kind of European heritage church or something like that. And I don't apologize for this anymore. John Coltrane created as many notes as Johann Sebastian Bach. And when you look at the transcriptions of their work side by side and realize Bach was an improviser because he had a weekly deadline to crank the music out, creativity is creativity. And I think over time it gets sifted out, this is good or this is lesser.
So Faubus is there?
Faubus is there. I commend to you the recordings of Charles Mingus. We're doing a lot of music from his famous Columbia album, Mingus A.M., from 1959, which was a very important year in terms of jazz history. A lot of great recordings. Dave Brubeck's Take Five and Time Out was that year. Miles Davis's album Kind of Blue was that year, and this one, Mingus Ayom, also on Columbia, as those other two. Well-marketed and well-distributed in the best sense, but not easily replicated. You know, it's, again, this is music that plays that dotted line between what's culturally acceptable and what's not. And here we are inviting that, too, into a church service, not knowing in advance what's going to happen, but trusting that as the musicians come with their skill and their energy, that something beautiful can be made.
The Reverend Bill Carter, pastor of the First Presbyterian Church of Clark Summit, jazz pianist and leader of the Presby Bott Sextet, speaking with us about a 25-year-old tradition at the First Presbyterian Church of Clark Summit, holding an annual Jazz Communion service Labor Day weekend, this Sunday, September 4th, at 10 o'clock, 300 School Street in Clark Summit, featuring the Presby Bott Sextet, jazz pianist Bill Carter leading, Al Hamm and Mike Carbone on saxophones, Jeff Stockham, trumpet and valve trombone, bassist Tony Marino and drummer Tyler Dempsey in the music of Charles Mingus, including this work, The Fables of Phoebus. Presby Bott Band was formed in 1993 by Bill Carter as a way to bring together his love of the music with his life of faith. The collective resume of the musicians includes extensive work with jazz notables such as Phil Woods, Jerry Mulligan, Dave Brubeck, Dave Liebman, Bobby McFerrin, Slam Stewart, and Natalie Cole. The event is open to the public. Visitors are advised, as we heard, to arrive early. For more information, on the web, fpccs.org, and that stands for First Presbyterian Church of Clark Summit, fpccs.org, and you can learn more and hear more from the Presby Bott Sextet, the Quintet, presbybop.com, and that's presbybop.com, presbybop.com, or the church's website, fpccs.org. Music of Charles Mingus as part of the 25th annual Jazz Communion service this Sunday, September 4th at 10 in the morning at the First Presbyterian Church of Clark Summit, 300 School Street in Clark Summit. For more information, on the web, fpccs.org, fpccs.org.